Welcome to Day Zero Update for August 23rd, 2026. I'm your host, Chris Elogi.
I'm Brandon Perkins.
And I'm Daniel Victoria.
And yeah, boy, it has been a week of news. A bunch of interesting things have happened. Some tragedies, some negative news, but not as much as usual. Mostly good news this week, which is surprising. But I guess it had to happen at some point.
Yeah.
But for now, we got a bunch of stuff to talk about. And yeah, we'll get to that stuff in a bit. But before we do that, we'll talk about what we've been playing. And I'll kick it off here. I've been playing some more Ace Combat 7 as the events in the Strange Reel continue to go off the rails. I finished 6 missions now. And they sort of introduce a new character, which is funny when they do it because functionally there's no difference. You can pick the exact same planes we were picking before and all that, so it's no real gameplay difference. They just refer to you by a different name, so you're controlling a character named Trigger. Really give a little bit of a background too, but you're going on this big mission to the space elevator that is sort of one of the key parts of the story here, especially because the former president who helped at the end of the last war kind of established that they were building this space elevator as like a peacekeeping mission, I guess, has been like taken hostage, and you are trying to, you know, go rescue him, which involves some interesting stuff. Like you follow your mini map and see like radar bubbles that you have to fly in these sort of dead zones, and so you kind of spend a lot of time there flying in like irregular patterns because you're trying to avoid these radar zones, which is like an interesting idea. And then you kind of go down and try to take down all the like AA guns and all this that are protecting the space elevator, and you know, plane comes in to rescue the president and take him out of there. And then as you're fighting a bunch of the enemies, the plane seems like it's gotten hijacked or something, is flying back around towards the space elevator. And push comes to shove, you shoot in the general direction of that plane, and it cuts to a cutscene of the plane blowing up. And you're led to believe that your character just killed the president, or the former president, which is like an interesting idea. I had to like look up a walkthrough and be like, was this like a choice thing, or was it a scripted thing? And it was a scripted thing. It would have been neat if they had some sort of choice system here, but you know, that's probably tougher to do. But your character then gets sent off to a prison that is sort of a fake airbase, where they have, you know, pilots fly these like ramshackle planes to scare off potential bombers and such. But they send you out to do that without any sort of weapons enabled, and a shocking thing happens and they end up attacking the base and knocking out the control tower. So then you and your crew are kind of given the go-ahead to shoot and, you know, take out the enemies, especially the bombers. And that's a fun whole thing, especially because a lot of the chatter you're getting is just, what's the murderer going to do? Why do you keep trying to shoot your guns? Trying to kill more people? And it's like, that's kind of the job of a pilot in this world. Shooting down planes and all that. So, yeah. You succeed on that one, and you still get to go back to prison. The next mission, you kind of go get sent out. Again, it's like the force that's supposed to take down a lot of the ground weapons and vehicles and all that. So at a certain point, I was taking out planes and helicopters flying in the air, because they were, it was one of those missions where I guess you're trying to reach a certain score, and then that sort of progresses the story of the mission along the way. So, and by the end, it's like, oh, who can get the most points wins, as they're like bragging about scores. But I was like destroying everything, and one guy's like, well, you let the murderer just kill everything, so what's wrong with you guys? Try to proclaim you're better than him, and he's doing the work. So that's been pretty fun. That one took me a few times because of various issues, you know, taking missiles, which take out about like a third of your health, so you can only take like three of them technically and all that. So that's been fun to jump into and keep playing. So I'm hoping to beat that before 8 is out. So we'll see how that goes. I've decided with all the Kingdom Hearts news, like, I should try and play through Kingdom Hearts. I've never done so. I rented it back in the day and just did not get very far into it. And I've had the collection on PS4 that's 1.5 and 2.5. I also have the 2.8 Prologue HD thing, and as well as Kingdom Hearts 3, which that latter one is the one I've put the most time into of any game in the series. So, but I started up, or I had a save from previously where I was still on the island at the beginning of the game. So I jumped back into that, and it's been interesting kind of jumping into it and seeing, like, oh, this is, they still have all the Final Fantasy characters in this, and that's kind of a really cool part of this, but I know that that is largely gone by the time they, which is a shame because they have a lot of fun characters. You know, Aerith, you have Tidus, Squall, though they call him Leon here. Who else is there? Yuffie, there's a few others, but they're kind of hanging around, mixed in with, you know, Donald and Goofy that you eventually get in Traverse Town. And that's like a neat vibe that you don't get much more in the later games. They kind of phase out the Final Fantasy characters for just straight up Disney stuff. Yeah, I remember like one of the issues I had, I remember, is like in Traverse Town, you're just kind of supposed to wander around and just fight Heartless for a while as you keep entering, you know, buildings. And when you leave, you usually get a cutscene of like, oh, here's Donald Goofy looking for the Keyblade guy.
Yeah.
Just always one building behind.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had to, at a certain point, kind of look up a guy and just be like, am I being stupid and going to the wrong places? And like, no, this is just kind of a thing where you wander around and fight Heartless, and it just kind of keeps going and going. And so eventually I run into Donald and Goofy, and they become part of my party, and we fight a boss who's, you know, pretty easy. The big, you know, set of armor that you kind of break apart. And like following this guide, I found a bunch of the chests that are around here, some of which I can get, some of which I can't get yet. There's also the hidden area where Merlin's hanging out. You can do magic, not training, but practice there, I guess, without using up your MP and all that. So that was all right. And then, you know, figured my way around and get to the point I can actually leave and go to the next area. So now I'm in Alice in Wonderland area, where she's been sentenced to get her head cut off. And I got to find evidence, which,
yep,
coincidentally involves you just kind of wandering around in this area, fighting enemies, and eventually...
Yeah.
I feel like that's kind of the MO of this. And like the key thing that I would say is annoying is that it doesn't keep in track of like what your goal is at any point to let you know. In classic like RPG fashion at that era, it often just assumed you would remember. So even if you take a break, you don't remember, you're screwed. You have to look up a guide and try to figure out where the hell you were at. So yeah, that's kind of where I'm at, where I'm trying to give some plants potions and they make me bigger. That lets me go do some other things and all that kind of fun stuff. So yeah, I'm probably going to keep a guide handy just in case I lose track of what I'm supposed to be doing, where I'm at. So that's kind of what I'm working on there. And yeah, like the combat doesn't feel great. You're just kind of mashing a button, hoping that they go to one of the enemies. Sometimes they just don't. And you can lock on if you want, but I feel like that's also can be annoying. It just swings the camera around in weird ways. Can be annoying. So that's kind of the Kingdom Hearts experience so far. Luckily, I've not been too far away from a save point, so I can jump in for a little bit, try and figure out what I'm doing, and then save and quit out and come back later. So that's at least a bonus here. Then I started playing some of those new PS Plus Classic releases from last week, which includes Onimusha Dawn of Dreams, the PS2, which, like the other Capcom games, doesn't have trophies. This one is the fourth of the sort of mainline Onimusha games, but the sixth overall, because I think there was a tactics game on the GBA, and then the platform fighter on the PS2, that are the other two games. But this one was sort of the one they were like, oh, let's make this more RPG style kind of game here. And apparently this Western version is more grindy than the Japanese version. And so it seems like the way that you can access the original version has changed the system settings on your PS5 to Japanese, which shouldn't have impede your ability to, you know, do things in there, but the game will still be in English. But otherwise, from what I could tell, if I'm reading things correctly, like they just throw in more enemies in some of these encounters, just have them keep spawning in for a while. And it's like, boy, this seems a lot more than you really need. And I guess it's to get you leveling up faster, I assume. But like first few like hours of the game, you're playing through like a chapter for like 20-30 minutes and then fight a boss that's pretty easy, and then the next chapter starts. The second chapter is just one boss fight. There's no anything else going on there. And then the third one is where it starts to open up a bit more, where you and your buddy, that's a very anime kind of sequel to this, you're kind of this samurai who's got like these demon horns that are not real horns, but they're just the thing you wear to intimidate people. And you got this little goober guy that hangs up upside down in this like cocoon kind of thing that apparently pees himself and whatever based on chatter they have with each other. But he acts like he's going to be a tough guy someday. And your character is like, yeah, sure. Whatever you say, kid. But yeah, now I found, it seems like you're going to get a party of like five characters that you swap between for the missions. And so I found the girl who's going to be part of this party. We had a boss fight and then take out the bad guys that have swarmed around the area. So that's kind of where I'm at on that. So that's been pretty good. I played Atlantis, The Lost Empire, based on the Disney movie of that era. This is like a 2000 or 2001 PS1 game, so a very late PS1 game. And visually, it looks really nice. It's kind of got that kind of flat shaded kind of cartoon style to it that a few like PS1 games kind of did. Minimize sort of the aliased polygonal look that they have for some of these characters. And so this is a game that is kind of an action adventure game. And the core conceit here is that you are playing as part of the crew. Mainly, you know, Milo is the main character. And you run up to these like radios that let you swap between the other characters. And so you're kind of, I played through the tutorial, which takes place in the scientist's house, and he kind of has you do a few things that are, you know, tutorial stuff to show you how things work. And then you go on your first mission, which involves the ship in the water as you're going down that, I guess, has problems for whatever reason. Yeah. And you're kind of fixing up engines and then abandoning the ship at a certain point. And wasn't doing any combat in this mission, but there will be combat at some point. But I was basically just running around being like, okay, now I need to go do this engine stuff. So I got to get the girl who's the engine person. Then going back and finding this other guy that is, I think it's called Vinny, who is able to like push stuff around, kind of the strong guy.
Mm-hmm.
And Milo can swim and do some other stuff, climb ladders, I guess. So yeah, you're kind of running around finding, save points and these, radios, kind of swapping between to figure out like, okay, I need to do this in this area. They're right around here. Okay, here it is. I can swap here and go do their thing. And occasionally collect items that are going to your inventory. And like an adventure game, you can sometimes combine them to do things, all that kind of stuff. I was having trouble with one, and it's like, oh yeah, I got to go back into the inventory and deal with that kind of thing. So it's got some nice ideas here for what it's doing here. So that one's pretty decent for that. But yeah, both of those are $10. If you have PS Plus, Onimusha Dawn of Dreams is half off right now for another week or so.
Hmm.
So you can get that for $5, which seems like a solid price if you want an Onimusha game to play while you're waiting for the new game. There's that. And then I jumped into the Duskbloods, whatever network tests they have going on. I managed to get in and figure out how to download it, which they made all this stuff as annoying as possible. Because you have to go through the Duskbloods website to sign up, weeks ago. And they don't send you like an email like, hey, you're in. You kind of literally go back to that site, log in, and it tells you like, oh, you're in. And again, they don't send you an email with the code for the game, nor put it in the eShop to be like, oh, you can go download it here, and it'll verify that your account's supposed to be playing it or anything like that. So you have to go back to that site, and there's an area for the code to get that and put that in and download it. And then from there, it's a matter of figuring out like when the times were, which they don't include on any of the like news posts on the dashboard or anything in game, which they really should have a thing in there. It's like, hey, this isn't live right now, but here are the times when it will be live, kind of thing. And so it was live this morning at 6 a.m. So it's like, all right, I happened to be up, so I played a bit of the intro up to the point where you get to like the hub area to start doing the multiplayer stuff and quit out there. But it's got some interesting mechanics to it, because it does not play like a lot of the other From stuff. You got, your combat's probably the thing that's most familiar, and having items on to use and all that, but you have your jump. You hold down the button, you'll do like a big high jump. But you can also do, I think it's either a triple or a quadruple jump as well to get across gaps. So there's a lot of mobility to it. And alongside the combat, you have this move that's like a howl or something like that, that lets you, at least AI enemies can kind of do some damage to them. But if you do it right, you can kind of put them under a spell, and they will kind of follow you around and fight other enemies with you. A really interesting idea for one of these. I'm going to guess that you'll be trying to enemies to help you fight other players or whatever is going on. I didn't do any of the multiplayer stuff, so I can't speak any specifics on that. But you do end up in a boss fight that you're not going to win against a guy. But he doesn't kill you. He just kind of beats you up a bit, and then a thing happens, and he runs off. And you kind of get, I think you just run into a direction and it's like, you're done with the network test. And it just zips you up to a home base area that then allows you to like matchmake into a game with other players and all that kind of stuff. And I haven't done anything, any of that yet. So I believe the last session is supposed to be open at 10 p.m. tonight. So I'll probably play a little bit there and see like what that's about. But that seemed neat. I don't know that it's going to be something I want to play, because it's multiplayer focus, so much like Night Rain, I did not really want to play one of these kind of games with other people, so this might be the end of what I'm playing of this game, but so far it's got some neat stuff. It's got like a Bloodborne vibes, because it's sort of under this, it's not dark, it's more dusk, I guess, but kind of more reddish sun hues, or like sunsetting hues around this place and all that, but more open areas to explore. I don't think it's open world or anything, but just Bloodborne featured a lot of like close quarters city areas and such, so this one seemed a lot more open, of like abandoned towns and neighborhoods and such. It seemed neat, but that's been what I've been playing. So how about you, Brandon?
Well, the one thing I've been playing more than anything else is a secret game that I cannot talk about, and that'll be the last I will say for it, as far as what I can talk about. But on top of other stuff, I've also still been playing Iron Nest, which is a, you know, I talked about this last week in a little bit, but basically it's a game where you are in a mobile artillery turret, basically. And it takes place in this alternate Spain in the 1920s, where there's a civil war happening between the monarchists and the Republicans. And you are a member of the Royal Army, who is basically the one who was selected to operate the Iron Nest, which is what this, the thing that you're in, is called. And the way the game works is that the entire game basically takes place inside the turret itself. And there's like a process of how you go about it. Basically, command sends you your orders, and those orders, sometimes they'll come with coordinates, sometimes they'll come with the locations of like spotters or like hints of where you need to shoot. Then you have to go, you take that, you use it to like calculate, you have to like get it on like the map table that you have in the middle to sort of figure out where you need to aim the gun and how far, how high you need to point it, that kind of thing. And then you go through the process of calculating how much you're going to need to raise it up depending on the distance, then choosing which type of ammo you're going to need to use, and then how many charges you're going to use to fire that ammo, because considering, you know, what the distance is, it's going to take a couple. Then you have to like point it in the right direction, and let's see, what else is there? That's basically, and then that's it. And then you just arm the gun and pull the trigger. And it's this very enormous feeling. The whole process of it is like this real huge buildup of like, you know, am I going to get it on the first shot or not? And more likely than not, you're not going to, because, a part of the game is because every time you fire off a shell, reconnaissance will then send back photos from the air of the area that you fired upon. If you manage to hit the direct target, it'll tell you that. And it might also show you like some other targets that are nearby. If you do not get it, instead, reconnaissance will send you back the arrow to show you in which direction you need to move your cannon towards, and distance between that area and the target itself. It is not unusual for the first few missions where you will have to like hit, you'll have to fire a couple of times in order to finally get onto the target. But the thing is, for the first few missions, you're like way out of the action. You're like way off, miles away in a sort of isolated area, far away from where the fighting is taking place. But later on, you're now like in the middle of the fighting. You're on the field. And that is like really tense, because every time you end up firing at your enemies, all of the nearby enemies that are there, they'll immediately know where you are. And you have about 30 seconds to move the turret out of the way. And moving the turret out of the way in and of itself has its own process, because you got to like figure out the coordinates you're going to go and then where it's going to move and just everything. It's incredibly tense, but it's a very fun game. Really enjoying it. And the other game that I have still been playing is Brigandine Abyss. This is a game I got, I was asked to review weeks ago, and I did not expect it to be as large as it ended up being, which is why on Smashpad I've got it as a review in progress. And the reason is because this game, when you immediately look at it, you're thinking this is a Fire Emblem clone. It is not a Fire Emblem clone at all. It is, in fact, a real-time strategy game that has bits of, you know, simulation RPG elements in it. The best way I like to describe it is it's like anime Risk trying to be Fire Emblem with bits of Settlers of Catan thrown in. That's basically what it is. There's like this huge thing of where your forces are now challenging another force, and then you have to conquer it, and it's like done by like statistics and stuff, you know, numbers, much like Risk. Then you go into the actual like fighting, and usually it can be like one battle to a couple of battles in turn. And again, that's your, you know, your fairly average sort of strategy RPG type stuff, one-on-one, trying to beat enemies and stuff. But there's also like a huge part of it, like you have to leave people behind to guard your territory. You've got to like build up your supplies so that you can like get more people and more better fortresses and better weapons and stuff like that, and trade and stuff like that. That's the kind of Settlers of Catan part of it. And the thing is, when I say it's a big game, this is a game that literally has six different storylines that you can go by. And the early parts of this game, I will not lie, they are a slog, because the game has all of these different systems that it's putting into play, and it has to take time to explain each one of them. And even then, you're probably not going to get all of them at once. You're still going to have to like sort of figure stuff out as you're playing. I don't hate this game. I actually think I actually admire its ambition, and there are parts of it I really do like. But the thing is, all that additional stuff just kind of weighs the game down, and it makes it sort of artificially longer than it really has to be. But yeah, that's basically what I've been playing. So Dan Reb, what about you?
Yeah, I've been playing a bunch of games. A few of them I can't talk about, but I'll go ahead and talk about like what I can. Like Chris, I jumped into the Duskbloods beta. And it's funny because like I signed up for it like thinking, all right, this is too popular. There's no way I'm gonna get in. And I got in. And like obviously I know a lot of like freelancers and other people in the industry, and I only actually know one person who didn't get in. So that's the funny part. Anyway, I have zero to no experience with From Software games outside of the original Demon Souls. So yeah, like that goes to show like how good at this I'll be. Chris already talked about like what you do in the tutorial section. And it was pretty cool just being able to run around that kind of area, you know, playing on Switch too. And I've been playing on docked, by the way. And unfortunately, I did not look at like what times the beta would be served. So I was actually kicked out in the middle of my match. But it's fine because I was getting my ass handed to me anyway. But what it is it's tagged as a PvPvE game. And that being said, while the intro did a good job of like showing you the ropes, there is never going to be any single player component for this game. From what I hear, it's going to be multiplayer the entire time. So that in itself makes me think I'm probably like not going to get into it, but I did find it interesting. Like the sessions that you play in kind of remind me more of a board game than like an actual like PvE kind of thing. So basically you start each match trying to get the right amount of points, and basically there are 3 to 4 phases, and each time you go to the next phase, you pretty much eliminate whoever doesn't have enough points to move on. And then at the end of the match, it becomes a triple threat, which unfortunately I was not able to complete. But it's been pretty cool. The class that I'm using has like this rice hat, and like she uses these circular blades. That's been pretty cool. Obviously, there's the default class with the sword and whatnot. But yeah, like obviously, like what I said doesn't really go into it too much because I've only really played it for a few minutes. There is going to be one more session tonight, so I hope to be able to jump into that tonight. Moving on with that, I've also started the Trails in the Sky second chapter demo today. We're going to talk about it later on in regards to, you know, some of the details. But yeah, for those of you unfamiliar, obviously we're huge fans of Trails on this publication, and this game is the remake to what is, in my opinion, the best game in the series. So I'm definitely really, really looking forward to it. There are some nuances that I'm already like a little irked with at the beginning. Like, for example, like the thing about every Trails game is that, especially on modern consoles, they do have a high speed mode. It took a while for me to find that. And then at the same time, like it took a while for me to figure out how to auto progress some of the dialogue that goes on. But I'm not sure if it's a story that we mention along the show today, but one of the things that they did with last year's game, Trails in the Sky, first chapter, was there was a big patch released a few days ago that pretty much corrected a lot of the translation issues that people had with that game. Like, for example, the main region that they're in is called Liberal. If you played through the game last year, they called it Liberal all the time. And like, that was one of the biggest things that irked me about the game. And they've more or less corrected it to pretty much like have universal accuracy throughout this, the entire series. Like, the tough thing about the Trails games is that if you've been a fan since the beginning, they've been published by different publishers. Like, it started off in America with Exceed and then went on to NIS America, and they do the modern ones, whereas these two remakes have been published by Gung Ho. There's actually another big Falcom game coming out sometime this year. We have no release date yet, and we have no publisher yet, and that's Kyoto Xanadu. And like, yeah, like we don't know who's going to publish that or if it'll even come out this year. So that's definitely something to look out for. But yeah, the demo has been fine so far. The first 30 minutes, in all honesty, is all cutscenes. So there really isn't a whole lot to do. I don't want to jump into the plot too much because it's a direct continuation off a cliffhanger. But the main thing to note is this demo is both the prologue and the first chapter. That right there is like 15 hours. So, you know, if you're somebody who isn't sure about the series yet, first of all, play the last game. And, you know, as far as like, you know, the wait for this game, like this game comes out like in a little more than 3 weeks. It comes out on September 17th. But considering like you're probably going to get at least 15 hours of playtime with this demo, you know, go ahead and get the demo if you can't wait. But yeah, that's pretty much it for me.
All right. So yeah, let's get to some news. And first up, the biggest news of the week was kind of a shocking death that we had. That affects both the film industry and, you know, Hollywood and all that, and as well as the game industry.
Mm-hmm.
Because it is Hayden Panettiere, who's done a bunch of work in both throughout her career.
Mm-hmm.
Since she was basically an infant.
Yeah.
But not so much on the game side, but her first, acting jobs were as a literal baby before she was even 1 year old. But gamers would know her from things like Kingdom Hearts. She was Kairi for the first few entries before she, you know, moved on. And anybody that hasn't played Kingdom Hearts but knows her from Until Dawn. She's one of the two main leads.
Mm-hmm.
There with Rami Malek, and I believe she was potentially going to play Sam or some other character in the Until Dawn 2 sequel. So I don't know if that's still gonna be the case or not, but that would have been neat, maybe having her as like a perpetual character in those games if they were gonna keep making more. But unfortunately, I don't think that's going to be the case for any of that. But yeah, she's done a lot of voice acting, and yeah, Until Dawn, a lot of performance capture. as well. So yeah, it's very sad news, and yeah, shame, because she, you know, passed away at such a young age at 36, and yeah, just kind of sad to see for, you know, how much of an impact she had in those years. So yeah, that's some sad news there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's really tough to hear, especially considering the timing. Like, obviously, D23 was huge for Kingdom Hearts. You know, mm-hmm. you have David Gallagher and Haley Joel Osment, you know, not only reprising their roles, but doing live readings of previous scenes. And, like, you know, you wish you get to see original Kairi there, but, you know, here's one of the reasons why. And it's really, really unfortunate. Hayden is a fantastic actress. Obviously, she's known for Heroes and roles in Scream and some of the lesser known Bring It On titles, but she was excellent in Remember the Titans. She was the other coach's daughter. So, you know, she's definitely someone who knows her stuff. Obviously, the bouts she's had with mental health, along with other things, like, even though, like, you know, she's definitely the spokesperson for a lot of the bad things that happened, you know, over with Epstein Island and whatnot, it's really unfortunate that her passing has to, you know, coincide with a lot of these conspiracy theories. And I think, like, that's unfortunate, because it really undermines, like, how great of a person she was, how great of an actress she was, and how many people she touched with her talent. So that's really, really unfortunate. She was actually one of the selling points for me with the Until Dawn game. I don't really see myself buying that game if I didn't know she was in it, and she was great in it. Like, you know, like, a lot of her later roles were like eye candy stuff, but she was definitely somebody who really backed up what she was doing, and it's sad to see her go.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know if you have anything to add, Brandon.
Nope. Pretty much did it pretty perfectly.
Yeah, I was looking this up. She voiced Dot in A Bug's Life, the game. So I don't know if that was actual voice work or just lines from the movie.
Mm-hmm.
She was also in The Mark of Kree. Which is mm-hmm. surprising. She plays a character named Tati, which I could not think of who that character is, but that's interesting. And yeah, just a bunch of the other Kingdom Hearts up to the 3DS game, I think, is the last one for her. So yeah, sad news for her family and all that. So yeah, we'll move on to some more positive news here. As we mentioned, the demo's out now for Trails in the Sky second chapter, PS5, Switch, and PC at the moment. So that seems like I think you should check out.
Yeah, the one point I forgot to make when I talked about it in the What Are We Playing is while it does allow you to play through the prologue and the first chapter of the game, I do want to note that if you're somebody who is a trophy or achievement hunter, when I did this with first chapter, I did not retroactively get the trophy that I would have gotten for the demo's prologue from last time. So I would assume that the same thing happens here. So if that's the case, maybe, you know, save it right before the prologue ends and then continue later. But yeah. That's all I need to care about that stuff. Yeah. Otherwise, you know, it being a demo that allows you to transfer your saves is always a good thing.
Yeah, that's the reason I don't often play through demos for RPGs that transfer over, is like I just assume they're not going to unlock the trophies.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll just play. If they give bonuses for having a save, I'll just play up to the first save point and then move on if it's something I know I'm gonna buy at launch. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, I'll just not bother most of the time. So, yeah, that's not a surprise. But yeah, we got some things coming out in the near future for August. We have a new Vampire Survivors DLC called Legacy of the Blood Moon. I believe they announced this at, might have been Summer Game Fest or one of the showcases around that.
Mm-hmm.
It's out August 28th. Adds 10 more characters, 16 new weapons, and what else does it add here? 8 new music tracks, a new XL stage. So that'll be a big one you can explore and all that. So, yeah, that looks neat. I did not find any pricing on this. It'll probably be a couple bucks at most for that. So, if you want some more Vampire Survivors, there's more coming on the way. So, there you go. You go check it out. So, there's that. Let's see, for September 24th, Sin Reloaded is launching. This is a remaster of the 1998 first-person shooter by Night Dive Studios. That was a game that was potentially competing with Half-Life for like the new future of first-person shooters.
Yeah.
And we saw how that goes.
Yep, we know who people decided to choose.
Yeah. But that game still has some interesting stuff to it. It definitely tried for some things, but yeah, definitely didn't succeed in beating Half-Life. Not really a huge knock on it. Yeah, like it had some interesting ideas, like being able to knock the weapon out of an enemy's hand and taking area-specific damage from enemies. You have some drivable vehicles, a good variety of them. There are also three different types of body armor for the legs, for the torso and the head. And they, you know, their numbers will deplete separately.
Yep.
So yeah, that's some of the neat stuff that it does. So yeah, that is as neat, and this should at least make it nice and playable for modern players. And all that. So, yeah, that is one to keep an eye on. That's going to be on everything. PlayStation, Xbox, Switch 2, and PC. You'll be able to play that in about a month. And then, in October, we finally got a date for Order of the Sinking Star, the new game from Jonathan Blow. Seems like it has a demo available now with the save data carrying over. So you can check it out and get started on that. Early. This is coming to PS5, Switch 2, and PC. And this isn't it should be a big deal game based on Jonathan Blow's past releases, but because of what he's done since The Witness launched on social media and all that.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people that are very much like, I would otherwise be interested in this, but Jonathan Blow sucks. So a lot of people just don't want to buy it and support him.
Yeah, I'm pretty much in the same boat there. I actually played a demo during Summer Game Fest. Unfortunately, it was very good, but you know, like Chris said, that's not somebody I want to support. So
yeah,
which is a shame because he sort of collaborated with a bunch of other developers that have worked on puzzle games. And yeah, they mention them here. The dev of Skipping Stones to Lonely Homes and Mirror Isles. The dev of Promest. The dev of Heroes of Sokoban. The dev of Enigmesh. The dev of Patrick's Parabox. And the dev of Miegakure, as well as others. So that is a big list of interesting people to work with. I think there's also been discourse about whether this was properly credited or not, or might have stolen puzzles from people. I don't know. I don't know what the extent of that was. I saw that at some point, but I've not seen it echoed much lately, so I assume that must not have been that legit, but it might also be something that, until that game is out, people won't think about it too much. But hopefully he did all that stuff on the up and up, but yeah.
Yeah.
Which is a shame, because there's always room for more great puzzle games, and this one, the vibes are off right now. I'm sure it'll review well, because, you know, Jonathan Blow tends to make good puzzle games. But yeah, that's a thing you can check out in a couple months. And our last date here, The Binding of Isaac on PC, has had this for a while now, but now it's coming to consoles. The Binding of Isaac Repentance Plus Online is coming to PS5, Xbox, Series X and S, and Switch 2 on November 19th. This brings full online cooperative play on the console, so you can play with friends through the game, which I assume they must account for that, for making it much, much more challenging and all that. But yeah, this also includes all the other DLC, which is Afterbirth, Afterbirth Plus, Repentance, and obviously Repentance Plus. So that adds, you know, hundreds of items, a bunch of characters, and, you know, a bunch of reasons to keep playing it over and over again for that. So yeah, that looks like that should be pretty cool. Kind of have the, what seems like the ultimate version of this game out there now. That's another one you can keep an eye on. And that's it for our dates here. We do have a couple more stories here. Marvel Cosmic Invasion is getting DLC this fall that's centers around Doctor Doom, that is called The Siege of Castle Doom. It'll add a new expansion of sorts centered on the villain that's, you know, going to be the feature for Avengers Doomsday.
Mm-hmm.
But that looks like that should be. Yeah, they're also adding a new game mode that places Doctor Doom front and center. But yeah, we don't really know anything else about that.
Mm-hmm.
It'll add two new characters, Cyclops and the Thing. Or no, those are the last ones that were added. I guess they still haven't announced what these new ones are, but I'm going to guess they're Fantastic Four related. You might get Richard Reed, and I don't know which of the others you might do. Maybe Johnny.
Mm.
But it looks like that should be neat. That's out this fall. No date yet. I wouldn't be surprised if we get a date pretty soon.
Mm.
That's anything there you're looking forward to, Brandon? One of the dates and all that?
Binding of Isaac, maybe. Because it's been a while since I've played that. I wouldn't mind looking at Order of the Singing Star, but like you said, Jonathan Blow sucks, and I would prefer not to have to support him financially if I can avoid it.
Yeah. How about you, Danner?
Yeah, I mean, we're probably going to get codes for Order of the Singing Star, and, you know, I might dabble with it. We'll see how that goes. Other than that, nothing really, you know, has me go crazy here, except for Trails in the Sky Second Chapter, which we already know I'm playing through demo. And the Marvel Cosmic Invasion. Are we on that? Yeah, we talked about that. I really enjoyed the last few, and like it's just one of those games I enjoy just going back to over and over. And not a lot of games do that for me anymore, except that one.
Yeah. And in spite of those dates, we do have a few games that are not going to make it for this year. First up is Neverway, which was supposed to be out in October. And seeing how close we are to October, it makes sense that this isn't going to make it. So
yeah, they'd been kind of quiet for a while, and it was like, yeah, of course it was going to get delayed.
Yeah, I think that one was a real bummer. Like, I think this could have like really snuck out in December. Every demo that's come out has been really polished, and at the same time, like, part of me is also speaking from the end of the fantasy critic point, and I'm still looking for one more game, but we'll be okay. I do think that when this game comes out, it's definitely going to be something to talk about.
Yeah. So yeah, you have to wait till some undisclosed part of next year. So that'll be fun. And the other one is sort of a low key game that I've heard some chatter about: Riz Dungeon Skeleton Key to My Heart. Was delayed to 2027. It was supposed to be out September 17th. And yeah, this was a game that is kind of one of those turn-based dungeon crawlers with some dating sim stuff in it.
Mm-hmm.
And probably plenty of wacky internet humor to it. That looked pretty neat, looked pretty solid, and yeah, ended up just getting delayed to... as you say, allows us to both add more content and avoid crunch. As a studio of 5 people, there were quite a few features in Monster Girls we were cutting in order to hit this September 17th release date. And we were starting to crunch to ensure this game was something we were proud of. So I understand the delay, like it comes as a disappointment. We hope that you can be reassured by the fact that we are making a better and healthier made Riz Dungeon with this delay, which makes sense. And also, I would say you're getting out of the crazy September window, so that probably helps you out. Maybe get into early next year where there's a little less competition, but yeah. There you go.
Yeah. Not to mention that day in general has Trails, has Fire Emblem, has another Eden, which, yeah, if you're crunching and you're trying to hit that date, you're not going to see very much success anyway. So good on them. Hopefully it does turn out good. I'm not going to lie. I learned about this game when it was delayed. But when I was reading about it, I'm like, yeah, there's a lot of funny stuff in here. And like, you know, there isn't a whole lot of stuff that's like, you know, okay, there is. There is a lot of stuff that's actually funny, but there is definitely no, we definitely need more. I'll say that.
Yeah. So yeah, that's a shame, but we did get some games with some trailers. The Phantom Blade Zero State of Play happened this week, and it actually looked pretty nice from what I saw of it. There was also one of the few of these games that I've seen, like a trailer, whatever, for it, where the big boss fight they played, they weren't in God mode. Uh-huh. We actually saw them take damage, unlike some of the ones we saw at, like, Summer Game Fest and all that. So that was like, this looks like the most perfect playthrough versus one that a human would do.
Uh-huh.
And so, yeah, it looks pretty neat. So they seem like they've got an interesting, like, weapon system, because there is, yeah, 30 main weapons plus 25 secondary weapons known as Phantom Edges. You can upgrade your weapons and pair them with different accessories to create the build you want. It seems like they got a decent amount of variety to the sorts of combats you can build around there. That looks neat. They have a bunch of difficulty options for all that, as well as a neat mode called 66 Days Mode, which I believe essentially you have like 66 lives. Every death advances a day, so you're trying to get through without dying that many times. And yeah, it seems like Donnie Yen is like a creative consultant for this game. He was the one kind of doing the presentation, so that was pretty neat to see. Yeah, and he plays the character Mo Yuan. I don't know if that's the main character or not. I don't think that's... but yeah, it's looks pretty neat from what they've shown, so... That's out October 29th, so
mm-hmm.
might be a good game for that fall Halloween kind of time frame.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this one's shaping up real well. I didn't watch any of this stuff at all, but I've already played this game 3 times, and each time I've played it, I've been more impressed by its presentation, the way it handled, and everything. Like, this one looks like a sure banger, and yeah, definitely don't let it get out of your radar. Like, I know it'll get a lot of Souls-like comparisons, but if there is any game to compare this to, it's Ninja Gaiden. And you know, obviously we had Ninja Gaiden 4 earlier this year. Yeah, definitely be able to check this one out.
Yeah. But yeah, there's that. And the other game is from Game Science, who every year on August 20th, uh-huh. puts out something. Either they announce like a new version of Black Myth Wukong, like they've done the last couple years, or this year they put out a trailer for their next game, Black Myth Zhongkui. It's a 15-minute trailer, so you can kind of take a look at that. And yeah, at least what they show here looks pretty nice. I did not play the first game, so I don't have any idea exactly what looks to be new and all that, but it's looking real nice, at least. So, yeah. I don't think there's any sort of date for any of this, or even platforms, really.
Mm-hmm.
So, they're still pretty early on that. But, yeah. Looking pretty good so far.
Mm-hmm.
So, there you go.
All right.
And, yeah, we got this bit of interesting news. There's been a lot of arcade games getting revived, and, you know, it's a lot of the things that everybody knows about. This one is an Irem game from back in the day, I believe, that some people have known about, but it's kind of a wild one. I think the original name was Ninja Baseball Batman, But obviously, for reasons you can probably guess, they are calling it in this revival Ninja Baseball League Man, Bases Loaded. It is a baseball themed side scrolling beat 'em up that is supposed to be really good. It's coming to PS5, Xbox, Switch 2, and PC. Oh. And that's looking really nice. I believe they're adding some things to this release here. I believe one of the characters that kind of gets mentioned has been added as a playable character. There's like a lady robot that's been added to this. And so, yeah. Looks really neat and wacky. So if you want an arcade game that is going to do a bunch of wild stuff, that is fun. Should be a fun one to check out.
Mm-hmm.
There you go.
Yeah, I definitely want to give this one a shot at some point.
Yeah. Yeah, so there you go for that. And then this one, not really a huge surprise.
We expecting
this, but in the recent announcement, earnings report, Warner Brothers confirmed that they're working on a sequel to Hogwarts Legacy, which is not a surprise because the first one sold so well.
Mm-hmm.
But funny thing with this article is they mention the stuff going on with J.K. Rowling. And there's people whining in the comments, like, keep your politics out of games. It's like, and keep J.K. Rowling out of politics.
Mm-hmm.
The thing you got to know about any Harry Potter stuff is that they will essentially give her more money with which to attack trans people. And even more recently, they're attacking people's freedom of speech.
Yeah.
In the UK, especially, Amnesty International put out a report about, you know, the attack on trans rights involving, you know, the TERFs in the UK, and they essentially threatened to sue them and force them to apologize and take down the report.
Mm-hmm.
For Amnesty International.
Yep.
Which, of course, obviously other people got a hold of that and have been posting it elsewhere on the internet, so it's still out there, but that's the fun thing that's going on around the edges of the Harry Potter stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And WB seems to be aware of how toxic she is at this point, because they had her put a somewhat pro-trans apology thing recently. It definitely isn't like, you need to do this or else we're going to do something. I don't know what they would do, but due to her, but they're like, we need you to do this to help us out. That's fun. So yeah, there you go. In case you somehow thought that wasn't being worked on, it is.
Yeah.
Yeah. And all the bad stuff aside, you know, Hogwarts Legacy was like the best selling game of the year it came out. So yeah, of course it's being made again.
Yeah. Speaking of things that have been selling well, we've got a couple games here. 007 First Light has reached 4 million copies sold, which is great news. Yeah. IO Interactive has been working on that for years, and it's great to see that it has been doing pretty well for them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, First Light's incredible. That's definitely going to be in discussion for a lot of our top tens.
Mm.
It's unfortunate that that will be the last one that IO gets to make all the decisions on.
Yeah.
Amazon will definitely be like, all right, we need a new deal. Work on the next thing. Luckily, they're not being idiots and being like, well, we'll make the decisions about that. They seem very much to realize, like, they should probably make a deal with IO to work on a sequel. If they would like to keep making more money.
Yes, please.
Don't do what the rights holders have done in the past, which is fuck around with it and somebody else makes, you know, attempts to make their version of GoldenEye that doesn't do that well. Until nobody wants to make a Bond game, because nobody wants to deal with all the bullshit that comes with that.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, there you go. And the other game here is Pokemon Pocopia, which has reached 5 million sales on the Switch 2, which is great to see. Not a huge surprise, but yeah, that one's been doing pretty well.
Yeah.
Yeah, hopefully with everything happening with physical games, a success would make Nintendo want to make some physical copies, like some real ones, but who knows? Yeah.
Exactly.
But yeah, we also got some good news here in the industry. Maybe good news for the time being. With the shutdown of Arcane, or at least Arcane Austin, Harvey Smith has announced that he is starting his own studio outside of the Xbox and Bethesda ecosystems. It is called Black Pony Immersive. That he said he wants to work on more immersive sims. Also admitting, saying, with his former colleague, Ben Horn, or former Arcane colleague, Ben Horn, saying, Ben and I chose the worst time in history to start a game studio. Because, you know, what else are you going to do? So at least he's honest and understands that this may or may not go well, but that'll be a fun time there. At least try to work on as many games as they can. Yeah, says here, Ben Horn saying, Harvey and I spent a lot of time in a really horrible environment for fundraising, talking to many different groups about how to raise money. We turned down some deals that just didn't feel right. You know, hey, if you guys are willing to maybe think about this NFT blockchain situation, as much as we wanted to get this off the ground, let's try to do it the right way. So, yeah. Harvey Smith worked on all the, you know, the Dishonored games, Prey, Deus Ex stuff and all that. So, got a good history in this genre, despite, you know, them tending to not sell that well. So they're going to try and see if they can find one that will sell well. Make one. So yeah, wish them all the best of luck there. So we'll see where that goes.
All right. Yeah, I do hope so, because that particular, honestly, that particular genre of game has been on a downswing for a while now. And it sucks because they're one of the most fun kinds of games to play. But yeah. I do understand why, because it takes a lot of work to make one of those.
Yeah. It's not necessarily the most casual friendly genre of games. It's the thing that limits them in the in appeal, but you know, some of those are gonna break out at some point. Maybe. But yeah, there you go for that. The other bit of interesting news that Mattel is creating a game studio that's, you know, using a really interesting name called Mattel Game Studios. They really got the brains going and coming up with, you know, unique names. So they came up with that. That's going to focus on developing, publishing, and operating titles based on their brand portfolio. And I bet they're very much looking at what happened for Hasbro and saying, let's not do that. Let's try to do the good things and not what Hasbro did, which is make a lot of mistakes. So, so yeah, you'll probably see Barbie. Maybe they'll bring the Hot Wheels stuff in-house.
Probably.
In the future. Uno. Maybe Masters of the Universe will get a game here or there. Who knows? They got a bunch of properties. There are many acquisitions over the years, so we'll see where that goes, but that sounds interesting. And then, yeah, we got some good news for Xbox Studios. Double Fine talked a bit about this this week, that they are going to be doing a Kickstarter for their next Amnesia Fortnite, that they're calling Amnesia Fortnite 2026 Indie Reboot, a Double Fine Productions game jam, which will also have a documentary from Two Players Productions. And it seems like this Kickstarter campaign will begin on August 31st and probably run through around the end of September. If you do not know, Amnesia Fortnite is their game jam that they did a bunch in the like 2010s. Yeah, 2017 is I think might be the last one that they formally did, which is where Kiln came from, that came out this year. That was a prototype they came up with then that, you know, just seemed to stick around for a while and then eventually got made into a full game. They've done a bunch of these where they would do partnerships with Humble Bundle, where if you put in at least $1, you would get, you know, usually Steam codes to try out a bunch of these prototypes.
Mm.
So that was something that was fun to check out. Trying to see what other games came out in some of these other ones. There's 2012, 2014, and 2017. I think 2012 was probably the best one they had, because that is where Costume Quest came from.
Mm.
It was a prototype made during the second Amnesia Fortnite in 2009. It wasn't public, but they included that prototype as a bonus with the 2012 prototypes. And yeah, that was led by Tasha Harris, who went on to lead at least the first Costume Quest. I don't know if she was still at Double Fine for the second one, but those are really good games. Space DF9 also came out as it went early access, I think, on Steam, and then ended up not getting finished.
Oh.
That one got pretty negative reception from players on Steam.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was a Hack and Slash, which was like a Zelda-inspired action-adventure game, but you solved your puzzles by hacking.
Mm-hmm.
That one seemed pretty neat, but only came out on Steam. Mm-hmm. In early access, and yeah, eventually got finished by 2014. So there's some good ones that come out of here, and some that are just fun little game jam things. So yeah, that's fun. I'm curious to see what sort of stuff comes out of this, because yeah, they'll probably pick a game or two to work on, and that'll be fun. And to be clear, this is not the future of the studio that's going to hang on this. They're working on other stuff that's, you know, they're working on getting a publisher deal for that stuff.
Yeah.
But for now, they're going to work on this thing as something to, you know, keep everybody busy in the near future.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm not going to lie. Like, I'm somebody who, like, just finds most game jams to be boring, but the way Double Fine does them is absolutely fun to see. They've done like documentaries on stuff they've done before, and it's great. But yeah, good on them for going independent. We did report on layoffs a few weeks ago, and that's obviously an unfortunate part, but it seems like they want to do everything the right way. Mm. And yeah, now that we can buy their latest games and actually support them, that's always good.
Yeah. They've said buying any of their games will send money to them. Xbox is not getting a cut of the stuff with Xbox in the publishing side of any of those games on their pages.
Mm-hmm.
But it just takes time to get that stuff adjusted through Steam, PlayStation, Xbox, and Switch, and all that. So, but they also said that I think Kiln and Keeper are going to get price drops here in the near future, and Psychonauts 2, I believe, is celebrating an anniversary this week coming up, so it'll be on sale.
Mm-hmm.
So keep an eye out for some of that stuff if you want to support them in the near future. So there you go, some fun stuff there.
Mm.
And in the same vein, Compulsion Games officially confirmed that they have, you know, separated from Xbox, and their games on Steam especially don't have Xbox in the publishing label on there anymore. The others should be getting fixed pretty soon.
Mm-hmm.
On PS5, Xbox, I believe. So you'll be able to check those out soon if you want to support them directly. So keep an eye on that stuff, and they'll probably be putting stuff on sale for South of Midnight. So keep an eye on that.
Yeah. And I'm glad, at least in some form, that game keeps to live on, because it had its issues, but damn, was it fun.
Yeah. Yeah. They're definitely trying to go their own way. Like, we reported a few weeks ago that they were sort of looking for support or co-development work for the near future while they're mm-hmm. working on whatever their next big game is. So hopefully that works out for them.
Mm-hmm.
And then, yeah, we'll get to this last bit of developer news, and that Deus Ex creator, Warren Spector, has announced his retirement.
Mm-hmm.
Basically saying that he's been in the industry for 44 years, has worked on, 17 full games and 9 or so add-on packs, that it's time for him to kind of retire and go fuck off to the point where he can just relax. Especially of late, the last like handful of years, it's just been rough trying to get anything he's interested in off the ground. And most recently, he was helping to oversee the game Thick as Thieves. Mm-hmm. That seemed to be running in trouble enough that they essentially put out a $5 like prologue with like the first two maps that they were going to add more content to over time, but did not do well enough to the point that they laid off everybody at the studio. Mm-hmm. And yeah, kind of just went real poorly. I think he says here he still has like ideas for like 3 more games, but doesn't really know what to do to get them made. So he also is very blunt of what he's talking about, you know, what he wants young developers to do, which is to like basically be much better than him. He says they're like, plus there's a new generation of developers coming up who deserve their time in the sun. I want you to remember that games are not a solved problem yet. There is, I hope, plenty of experimentation and innovation to come. To all you young developers out there, I've said it before and I'll say it again, your job is to make people forget people like me ever existed. Will I come back? Never say never, but I think it's time to ride off into the sunset. So yeah, from what I've heard about him, he seems like everybody has, you know, nice words to say about him. He seems like a genuinely nice person, and also is very much one of those people that is annoyed when he gets described as the Deus Ex creator. Considering he worked with a, you know, old team of people that helps make that game what it was, not just him. And that he kind of doesn't like being reduced to just being the sole creator of it, when that's not how he views it. Leads to fun images of, I think, from IGN, where it's like him saying that, then it's like it says Warren Spector, creator of Deus Ex, to show like they didn't pay attention, or, you know, whoever went over that article didn't think that was worthy of actually paying attention to. So yeah, kind of ends up leading a really interesting career. He worked on Ultima games in the late 80s, and then went on to Wing Commander, then created the Deus Ex series at with Ion Storm, worked on some of the later Thief games, worked on Ultima Underworld at Looking Glass, then founded Junction Point Studios to work on Epic Mickey, which had more grander vision to it than what ended up coming out, unfortunately. But yeah, and then joined Other Side Entertainment, where he oversaw development of System Shock 3, Underworld Ascendant, and sort of, yeah, has just kind of always been working on games. Some of them just don't work out. But the ones that do end up being sort of genre defining. And yeah, it'd be sad to see him go, but he's had a hell of a legacy and is probably more than happy to, you know, pass on his wisdom to anybody that wants it. So yeah, I don't know if you have anything to add.
No, not particularly. I mean, it's sad to see him retire because, you know, he's one of those. He's one of those guys who, you know, as long as he was around, the industry was better for it. But yeah, I kind of understand why he's decided to step down now. The industry right now is in kind of a dark place. And yeah, I don't blame him for deciding to say, yep, just ducking out at this moment.
Yeah. I've talked about it plenty of times. It is very rare in this industry for like one person to stick out like this, and you know, Warren Spector did that, and he absolutely deserves it. But also, with the way the industry is, I don't blame him one bit. And at the same time, it's like he's definitely left his footprint and his mark on the industry. That said, like, this doesn't affect me quite that much, just because like I don't really resonate with any of the games that he's made. But at the same time, like, you know, obviously as someone who's a fan of the medium, I definitely appreciate everything that he's done.
Yeah. So yeah, we'll end up on this last story here. That is not a huge surprise. Riot Games announced that they are done with active development on 2XKO or Double Knight. They call it their fighting game they put out at the beginning of this year. That I would not be surprised if nobody knew that it happened.
Yeah.
They did not really seem to do a great job of getting the word out there.
Mm-hmm.
I looked it up. They had a trailer at the Game Awards in December with no date on it, just saying January
mm-hmm.
for the launch, and then announced at like on like New Year's Eve a date, and then that came out on PS5 and Xbox, I think January 20th. And for free-to-play games, that came out alongside another game called Arknight Enfield on PS5. Mm-hmm. It did much better than it. And yeah, which is a shame because it's been an idea I think they've had in the works for quite a while, which is not surprising because they bought the devs that were working on essentially like a casual, friendly fighting game that's, you know, seemed like it was doing a lot of cool things for that, but probably missed its window to really get out there and make an impact instead of coming, you know, in the wake of Street Fighter 6 and, you know, some of these other games out there that, you know, maybe free to play isn't a good idea for fighting games when you're a new IP.
Mm-hmm.
It could maybe be reasonable for like a Dead or Alive or something like that, where you probably can come in and know that there's going to be work done on that, and that's, you know, experience with it, it's going to benefit you. But with a new IP like 2XKO, that's just not really going to work super well.
Mm-hmm.
And it didn't. People don't really care about this like tag team fighting game with characters they don't know, and then being aggressively monetized on that as well.
Mm-hmm.
Which doesn't really work for fighting games, so...
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah. It seems like they are doing some of their last changes to this as of this past week.
Mm-hmm.
Disable the KO points currency from being able to be purchased anymore, and you can use what you have left until September 8th. So, spend it, I guess, while you got it.
Mm-hmm.
But they're also refunding purchases made on or before August 20th, so at least doing some nice things, which makes sense because they have a lot of money from League and all that, so might as well do refunds and get some good word of mouth there. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, this is an example of a development studio doing everything wrong from the get-go. I get that they were just trying to be different, but sometimes too different is just too much. You know, we talked about it earlier. Like, you launch with 10 characters, and these are characters that people don't even care about in the League of Legends series. You launch in a free-to-play mode, which hasn't really worked for a fighting game. Granted, like, I respect them taking a chance, but it was clear that it wasn't doing anything. And at the same time, the most annoying part is that the game is actually good. But because it's good, you don't really give people the opportunity to just pay for everything up front, and that did them in. Not to mention, this was in development for more than 10 years. So, you know, whenever you have something that's been made for that long and then you decide to delay it, like, at the same time, like, delaying is good because, you know, a delayed game can eventually become good. We've seen that all sorts of times. But when you delay a game, that also means that you're extending the contracts and salaries for the people that you're paying. And granted, they're deserved, but also it's like, you know, if a bunch of people are making $100,000 a year and it's a 10-year game, those people were paid like millions of dollars and you don't know if you have it. Granted, it is Riot. Riot does have it. League makes a lot of money. So obviously they're doing a lot of great things to save face. But aside from that, it's just, yeah, like we already heard like about some layoffs affecting some studios here, and it's unfortunate. But yeah. I don't think anybody was surprised about what happened to this game in particular.
Yeah. I don't know if you have anything to add, Brandon.
No. I mean, Danner pretty much nailed it. It does suck because, like, I do like the idea of having a, you know, League-related fighting game. It definitely has, like, enough characters and lore to do it, but the whole business model just sucks. So, I'm not surprised it ended up sort of bottoming out the way it did.
Yeah. It seems like the updates they're doing is kind of wild to see, because they're going to be removing the ranked mode, ranked mm-hmm. lobbies, and then updates coming up, streamlining casual lobby matchmaking, private lobbies with getting voice chats, and a large map supporting up to 40 players. I'm assuming that's like a lobby kind mm-hmm. of thing. They may still be selling stuff. A bundle containing most of the cosmetic content will be available for $40. Riot will also make some items available for credits and remove battle passes, KO points, champion tokens, seasons, and events to support the long-term online experience. So you can kind of get it in a more traditional fighting game form, but I don't think that would be that appealing when you know that they're, you know, not going to work on the game any further. And yeah, the October patch will add the final champion. And yeah, and just by December, they're essentially going to put out the last of their major bug fixes and all that and be done with it. So,
mm-hmm.
and that's it. So yeah, probably won't be missed all that much. There you go. That's some fun news for the week.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that is going to do it for the show. Thank you to Brandon and Danner for joining this week.
Always.
We'll be back with some new games and such to talk about. This week coming up has a bunch of games coming out. Brigandine Abyss is out this week. Kalanoro, the Malagasy folklore-inspired action-adventure game.
Mm-hmm.
Looks neat. So there's Lou's Lagoon, which is like a cozy island adventure game kind of thing. The Metal Gear Solid Master Collection Volume 2 with Metal Gear Solid 4 finally being available on non-PS3 platforms. And I believe I saw that the infamous loading screen of Solid Snake smoking is still in there.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a thing you can call up and just watch, I guess, for as long as you want to watch that.
Mm-hmm.
So at least that screen will still be there. Resonance of Plague Tale Legacy is out this week, and Star Wars Zero Company.
Mm-hmm.
Five of those games out in the same day.
Yeah.
So good luck figuring out if you want to play any of those.
Mm-hmm.
There's Captain Tsubasa World Fighter, Captain Tsubasa 2 World Fighters. Mm-hmm. And then Elden Ring Tarnished Edition for the Switch 2, and I believe the Tarnished DLC will also be available separately for all the other platforms. So.
Mm-hmm.
What that includes, I don't know. I think it's just some cosmetic stuff.
Mm.
I'm sure with the From Software's whole deal, they'll add some weird thing to it
mm-hmm.
that makes it valuable. So there's another reason to play more Elden Ring. So,
yep.
There you go. A bunch of games here to round out the month. So, yeah. But yeah, if you enjoy the show, feel free to let friends and family know they should check it out and select strangers who are also excited to have Metal Gear Solid 4 available on more platforms.
Oh yeah.
So yeah, thank you all. Yeah. Thank you all for tuning in. And yeah, we'll see you all next time. Have a good one.
Bye.
See ya.